Running a call center sales team is definitely filled with challenges, but at the same time, can be very rewarding. There is no manual for how to win the call center sales game, which is why this podcast exists. As your guide, our goal is to help you overcome challenges, discover new tools, innovate where possible, and hear stories from others who have made it to the top of the call center mountain. Welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast with your host, Jason Cutter.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Thanks for joining for another episode of the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. Super excited. Today, I have with me the amazing Courtney Sylvester from Sales Intel. She is a data genius, and I don't say that lightly, but I love people who come from a sales, ops, marketing, and then data standpoint. I mean, she's super passionate about data. She loves the analytics. I appreciate my conversations with her about data for my clients, for different kinds of strategies, because she's just focused on how do we get the best results. And it's always true. I mean, salespeople will always say it, like they want the good leads. They want the Glengarry leads. There's some truth to valid, good data and having a foundation and also having a good strategy with it. So that's why I'm super excited to speak with her. Courtney, welcome to the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me here. And I feel like I'm blushing now. That was like the nicest thing probably anybody said to me. And I would prefer to think of myself as just like a solid okay. That's what you strive for. Just be like okay at most things and you're good to go.
I think that's you probably under promising so that you can then come around and over deliver for sure. Because I know definitely your data analytics and you know, crafting some solutions are more than okay. So you're definitely selling yourself short, but maybe that's part of the strategy.
Keep expectations low.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. So let's talk about data. I mean, because this show is obviously for call centers, for people who are wanting to scale, they want to grow. They have some level of call center, some level of inside sales team, which means they need somebody to contact, right? If you're doing SDR, BDR, telemarketing, you got to feed something into the machine that's then making outbound dials. If you have salespeople that are they're hunting for themselves, they've got to know who to go after, unless you're just literally, you know, handing them a phone book or telling them to Google it on their own and they're completely on their own. Something has to be provided. And when we really get into the scaling, right, which is what I want to talk to you about, It's easy to get data for a few salespeople or a few telemarketers, right? And feed a small machine. When you want to scale and go to 10, go to 15, go to 20, go to 100, now you're talking about a giant thing. What do you see as the challenges when it comes to the data side, when people scale, like either what they know of or they don't know the challenges might be?
I honestly think at this point, the biggest thing that holds people back is, yeah, you can have inaccurate data, or maybe you have tons of data and some of it's great. I think most people just don't know what to do with what they already have. And that should always be, you know, your first point is understanding what you currently have, understanding, can you do anything with it and how recent it is, and, you know, knowing where the data came from, how you've gathered it, and if it's being updated. So, you know, I work right now with contact data, but I've worked with lots of different data previously as well. So you want to make sure you can get every insight from what you've got before you move forward with, you know, buying a million different products that are supposed to help you. You know, you still have to run those products. You still have to incorporate them into your systems, and you need to do it in a way where everything's mapped correctly. You're not looking at reports and like, well, it says this. You need to know the sources for everything you're doing. So know your data, know what you have, know where it is. And that's going to help you understand where there are gaps and what you might need when it comes to time, you know, when it really comes down to, you know, you want to expand, you need new people. It'll also help you show you who your customers are and who you should be going after. You should be analyzing your own customers. You should be analyzing everything you have regularly to make better decisions in terms of sales, marketing, operations, just everything. But having a warehouse of stuff and you have no idea what it is, like you're paying for that too. So know what you've got and what you can get rid of as well.
And that makes total sense. I've seen that so many times with companies where they think they need more data. They want to buy more data. A lot of times it's usually driven by the sales team, the sales managers, sales leaders, where if they could just find the best data or just give them fresh data is always the key because that's going to be better than old data. While at the same time, you go through the system and they have all of these buckets, disconnected buckets of old data that they tried or that's sitting in spreadsheets or it's in a CRM that no one's touching. And you just see that a lot, right? And is that that's what you're referring to?
Yeah, you see that a lot. And then you also see people who have maybe paid for the same thing and it's in different systems, multiple ways, or they're getting more data in. And because it wasn't categorized and they haven't standardized everything that they have, they're just creating duplicates and creating more problems. And, you know, if you use Salesforce or HubSpot, especially like HubSpot, you're now spending a lot more money to house that data because you just jumped up a tier probably. And if a third of your database is duplicates or incorrect, you know what, it's a waste of money as well. So this is something that also ties into like revenue and like, you know, finance, because you need to be aware of what you're paying for, why you're paying for it.
And then the other part, which I think you were referring to, which is you have all this data. Before necessarily buying more data or buying more tools or trying to figure out how to get new things, is what do you have now? How can you actually use it or enhance what you've got to make it so that you can get the most out of what you see? Like with the clients you deal with or the people that come to you, how often do you see that where it's like, I don't necessarily need to sell you more new data. I just need to help you enhance what you've got or organize what you've got or actually use what you've got.
Yeah. So we categorize this as data enrichment. So we might look into your system and see who we can tell is, you know, we can give you a phone number for them or something like that too. Or in a lot of cases too, where this matters even more is maybe you sold a company and I mean, most companies aren't going to require you to put every piece of information about that organization in there. Getting that firmographic information, like the industry, the number of people there, the size of that, you know, the revenue, information like that can help you make more informed decisions. I like to tie that to how quickly things close as well. Everybody talks about your, you know, how long it takes you to close a deal. Great.
Yeah.
It's not the same across the board. So if you're having a really bad quarter and you know, when you hit these people, they tend to close in half the amount of time, maybe that should be your focus. If you're killing it already and you know that you're going to have a great year, focus on those bigger ones and that are going to take a little bit longer that you're okay spending that time on. It should inform most of your decisions. But I think and you and I have talked about this, be open to being wrong about whatever you think it's going to show you. That's one of the things that I think I learned the earliest was to stop looking for exactly what I wanted. And it's one thing when you're showing a client like your value, you might have to find a few ways to look at the data to see where it's really, you know, you see that uplift or you don't. If it's your own data, walk in, just open-minded and be ready to be wrong so that you can make better decisions moving forward, even if it's not exactly what you thought it was going to be. You thought you sold to Fortune 500 companies only, and realistically, you're not quite there yet. But it also can help you figure out why aren't we hitting these people? Do we need more contacts? Is our messaging bad? It'll help you understand how to bridge that gap as well, and at least start to cross out some of the reasons why it could be that you're failing in that arena.
And I think that's such a great point about being open-minded and going into it and being okay with being wrong or finding something new that you weren't expecting. I think the biggest challenge, and this is what I've seen, and for anyone listening to this, hopefully this, you know, something you can look at, is there's always egos involved, right? And we all have egos. It's our primal part of our brain that's trying to keep us alive and keep us safe and keep us a part of the tribe by not screwing anything up too bad with others, so we don't get kicked out of the tribe of humans, which, you know, not too long ago, that was a thing. In business, you see that a lot. the egos kick in and it's like, oh, I bought this data. This data's got to be good because we bought this data, or I'm committed to, like you said, Fortune 500 companies. And so that must be what we're good at selling to. And so it's going to be this, you know, observational bias of like, this is what I want to see. So it must be right. And this is only what I'm going to see. And then, you know, at what cost? I know for myself, I've been in companies and worked with companies where it's like, no, that's not who you're good at selling to, or this isn't good, or this isn't the right source. And sometimes that goes over well, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, that's a difficult one. You know, I think, like in sales, I tend to be a bit, I don't need you to think I'm the smartest person in the room. I don't need you. You can feel like you're one-upping me. I don't care. Sure, go for it. That's fine. But when it comes to these strategies, getting people to see that they were perhaps wrong about a purchase, it's more about like educating you for the next steps. And if you can't see that you maybe didn't make the best, you know, you didn't make the best decision when you did this and you didn't do your due diligence, I try to educate people in a way that's kind of inoffensive. Try, if they seem like someone who would probably look at this on their own, but they don't want to hear it from me, you know, you send them the materials or go through, but people don't, you're right. I mean, no one likes really admitting that they're wrong, especially when it comes to buying something. So all you can do is find ways to move forward. And realistically, like what we'll try to do is help you out in any way that we can. And then, you know, when time renewal time, not everybody can bring on two competing products and justify that with their CFOs.
Yeah. Well, and that kind of leads to something else that I know that we've both experienced. And anybody who's been in sales for any length of time has known this, which is by the time you talk to a potential customer, in your case, you're talking to a potential company about their data, they have most likely been burned by some other experience or very unhappy or feel wronged by data they bought or a data provider or something like that. And many times you might not even realize it when you're in sales, but you're up against not just kind of justifying your own value, but also up against, you know, a bad experience they had in the past. And that's pretty common in data because everyone promises amazing data and really there is no perfect data. And so people chase this perfect ideal only to get burned over and over again. And when you do have a good solution, like with what you provide, sometimes it's tough to convince them that you're one of the good people, right?
If anyone tells you that like anything they have in terms of data they're providing is 100% accurate, just run away. Like don't go anywhere near that company. It's not going to work. You're going to run into issues. Just understand how they handle it when something does go wrong. That would be my advice to anyone in any industry, like looking to purchase data from a third party. Do your due diligence and test it. Test in a larger amount than you think you should. I know there's pushback sometimes even within our company. Sometimes someone will give someone like 50 contacts to try out. And that's not always that indicative of anything. And that's something we talk about pretty regularly. This doesn't necessarily showcase what's here, what's not here. I remember one time, actually, I had like a 90, it was almost like 100% match rate on an enrichment job, which anyone who's ever enriched their data sets, like you're dealing with old data, like bad data, like you should not have 100%. I was like, this means nothing. I want you guys to know this means absolutely nothing. This is just chance. We will not match 100% of your database. It's not possible. But you end up in these weird spots as a result of that. So I think what people, when it comes to your data, once you are purchasing, once you determine what you need and understand how you're going to use it, you know, you're trialing it regularly, you're testing it out, use it, but you have to keep it enriched and updated, or there is really no point. The minute you buy that list, if you're buying a list, and it's why a lot of companies have moved away from that, it's pretty much like the depreciation just starts, it's already started.
Yeah. So let's talk about that testing thing, because I see this a lot and I'd love to hear your opinion on it. So it's going to be a couple of loaded questions here for you. One is how much testing, you know, what would be a fair test? And obviously that's going to depend whether it's B2C, B2B, you know, the kind of the quality, what you're looking at. So you said 50 is not enough to test, but what might be a good guideline, you know, that you're kind of seeing? You live mostly in the B2B world. So what does that look like? So one would be how much of a test would do to do. And then what are your thoughts on buying a company making you buy a small amount of test data or giving you free test data?
So we, I think a lot of this depends on the company that you're working with. So that 50, if you have a really tiny target market, that means a lot more. That 50, if 50 and really like all you're testing out is these like 1,000 contacts, that's actually not bad. If you're looking for an indication in your market is all B2C customers or all B2B, 50 is probably not going to be enough. And frankly, I would look more at like match rates, take some data sets that you know well, and get a better understanding, like, can they fill in the blanks? Are there things that they have that we don't currently have? To get an understanding of that, that's probably going to be your best bet when you're testing out a huge amount of data. Know where your data comes from when you're doing those tests. And that's what matters too. I have a, we'll go against competitors sometimes, and people have pulled the data from the competitor and then they're testing the two of us, which I don't understand. I do not understand what sense that makes to anyone. Are you, if you want us to fill in gaps, that's okay. But you can't say they have 100% match rate on data they originally gave us and you guys had, you know, 70% match on it. That seems like an odd thing. So think long and hard about what you're testing and then, you know, what your needs are going to matter too. So if you're going after a ton of like cold calling and net new and you're not really sure, make sure how you test the data, if it is like a plan in place, you have a plan in place to test that data. If you're not just doing an enrichment to see what sort of match rates you get and you have these net new and you want to try them out. I love working with companies like dialers like Concert and organizations like that. I'm happy to like give them data to test because their performance is also based on the data that they're given. Same with like BDRs and SDRs as you're scaling. If you're testing a product that you have no idea the list that you gave them to test out to see their efficacy, if that's any good, and they have terrible rates so when they're calling someone, no one can really fight that. You're not giving anyone a fighting chance at that point. And that's not usually a great way to start out. So I would certainly say it's going to change depending on the company and the needs. If it's like an operations person, we're probably going to be doing like an enrichment test. If it's somebody in marketing, they might want to see what the bounce rates are. If you've got SDR teams, they're going to want to call some people. So make sure that it's tailored to your needs and you're not just getting a list of emails, but you don't even email. So what are you doing with those really? Like have a plan in place before you bother trialing anything. Know how you're going to see if this is going to work for you.
And then the second part about the free trial, the paid trial, what are your thoughts on that?
I am always happy to let people try out the data on their own so that they know how this works. Some people do not like doing that or actually can't. A lot of companies will not like allow that and they'll want to do a proof of concept or something like that. So that's just depends on the organization. I think, you know, there's certainly value in paying for it, but paying a minimal amount of money for a POC, it makes sense. You know, you run through this, they're really going to test this. This is a pretty serious thing. If this is just like a 2-day trial, it's probably more effort to get someone to pay for that than it would be worth if they're not going to ultimately buy. So I don't have any problems letting people test things out. I think that works. I just realized that some people can't or have to do a much more extended trial. And then it's good to have some skin in the game. That way, you know that they're actually going to test it out because they're going to have to show somebody that they didn't just take a bunch of data and did nothing with it.
Yeah. And I think that's the big key. And I think what a lot of buyers don't understand, data list buyers, what they don't understand is as often as they have been potentially burned by lead seller, data seller, you know, aggregators and things like that, the sellers have been burned by buyers who are like, oh, why don't you just give me 1,000 free records and then let me test it, right? And then poof, they're gone. Or they take a bunch of data on an invoice, then they never pay for it, right? I know so many buyers that they don't trust, or have so many sellers that they literally don't trust the buyers anymore because they've been burned so many times by shady business operators who just want to get data and then run it through. So it's always something to keep in mind. You know, a lot of times I've seen buyers get offended, like, oh, how can you make me pay for this? Just got to understand, right? They're like, well, I want it free because I don't trust you. And the sellers are like, well, I don't want to give it to you free because I don't trust you. And so, you know, it's all about the relationship at some
point. Yeah. And I think that assuming someone's going to give you thousands of contacts to test out is insane. Like, you know, 100, like a smaller number, sure. But don't, you really can't expect that someone's just going to give away what they, you know, their entire product, whatever that is, just for you to test out. And, you know, there are always ways to test things and like look at it yourself. So make sure if you want to be able to poke around, get access, get a trial that way too, because I think that's one of the better ways to look. It's always a little bit astonishing when someone's done a really thorough test and then they seem bamboo. They feel like something was wrong later. Like it wasn't like this before. It was. It's just make sure you know what you're doing. Pay attention when people are doing those demos. You don't want to assume you understand everything when you perhaps don't, because I'm not a big fan of just like going through trials. It can be a little tedious. Sometimes people over explain things that are very basic, but because of that, and that's something I would say even for sellers, make sure that you're talking to your audience. Like, do I need to explain like what location is? Probably not.
Yeah.
But the more in-depth things, it makes you not pay attention later to those.
Yeah. Well, and you see that a lot too, where just people are desensitized because they see it all the time. So they think others just know what they know when it comes to data, either the buyer or the seller.
Yeah. We see that with acronyms, I'm sure, all the time.
Oh my gosh. All the time. So, so one thing you mentioned earlier, which I think is a good direction. Like I want to know what you're seeing, what you found work effectively. You said earlier that when you're dealing with operations people, it might be in enrichment. When you're dealing with another department, it might be this or that. You know, one of the classic challenges that organizations have that they don't ever seem to do anything about is this siloed nature of sales, marketing, operations. It usually becomes sales versus marketing, sales versus operations, sales versus everybody. And I won't go into my thoughts on that, but when you look at it from like a data standpoint, right? It's like, okay, so marketing needs the data for this. Sales wants data for this. Operations or rev ops is maybe using this. Somebody's got a budget here. Somebody's got a strategy and a tactic, a playbook. Like, what have you seen, let's just say, work well? If somebody's got this kind of fragmented thing, how have you seen it work well with companies that are aligning those together where they're like, okay, we're going to buy this one thing of data, and then we're going to run it through the machine?
Yeah. So this is something very few companies, I know you can attest to this as well. Very few companies have the luxury, as much as I know so many people in the organizations want to change it. You always have like one department that sort of controls things and gets more information or more budget or whatever it is. And everybody else is either kind of living off the scraps from that organization, or they're not working together for like a cohesive, you know, solution or tactics realistically. But we do have, there's one company I have in mind, I can't name them, but they were one of my first sales, actually, at Sales Intel, and they ruined me completely. They had, like, this was the first like enterprise level, like big company. I had operations, lead gen, marketing, sales, SDR team, and then like their analytics person. All of those people were on that call. And I was like, oh, wow, they really got it together, this company. And then never have I seen that again, realistically, like where they're all on the call. But they were, you know, I understanding like, so you start things in marketing and you kind of move them outwards. Obviously, like as leads come in, sales is going to use data to enrich. They're going to be on LinkedIn using things to find people. They're going to use it slightly differently. But if you guys are all targeting drastically different people, that's going to cause some problems and you're probably not going to be as effective as you might otherwise be. And I wish there was a better solution to this one. And I think ultimately, and this is just me, this is my opinion here, I think companies should, I wish people could do a better job aligning sales and marketing goals. And I think back to something actually you said to me once a while ago, which was just, you know, I know you did a podcast, I think, on this as well. Like, where does marketing end and sales begin, especially when we're talking about SDRs and BDRs? And I think about that a lot. It's not always very clear. But having a cohesive data strategy and understanding what all the points in your CRM mean, if you're sales and you're looking at something, or from a marketing standpoint, when to let that lead go, like really like push like some of these really engaged leads to your SDR team who download everything, they look at stuff, but they never actually reply or set up a demo, maybe they need a phone call. So like know when to push those as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for people listening or watching, yeah, the where does marketing end and sales begin? You know, that the debate that most people don't even think about, which is who should own SDRs, right? Is that marketing? Is that sales? Because who's feeding them? What are they, you know, they're kind of in between. But I love what you said about that one of that first client you had and how they ruined you in a good way for like they brought everyone to the table, all the stakeholders who would be involved with data and need data and utilize it. That's what you want, right? And I think what I've always seen is there's one person who's tasked with getting data, and then that's the one who's going out there and making the decisions, or at least starting the conversations. And maybe there's some decision makers behind the scene, but then they're getting it, and then they feel like it's up to them to be running it. They're the ones in charge of it. And then of course, somebody else is going to be upset, right? Because it's not going to make them happy. They're going to wish they had this. They're going to blame the data. That's where you see it, right? When sales is not buying the data, then they're going to blame the data. When sales buys the data, it's tough for them to blame it because they're the ones who bought it, right? It was their choice. And I love that idea for anyone listening or watching too. When you are looking for data, whether it's the enrichment or it's net new data, is to literally bring everyone to the table who's going to have a question and going to be a part of using it, because that way everyone has a voice. And then the great part about that is if the group decides to move forward with that and it makes sense, if it doesn't work out well, there can't be any finger pointing because everyone was a part of the decision-making process.
Absolutely. I think that that's so important. And, you know, from a seller's standpoint too, it's great. Like when you can, everyone wants more people on board because more, it's great. And then from the CS point, you have different people who know what's going on. But realistically, when something, you have one champion and like one department and that person leaves or something happens, like other people don't know the impact that has. And they're like, well, we're just not renewing this. We're not going to do it because they don't know what it is. And maybe you can't get them on the phone. So yeah. It's not just, you want that obviously to push a sale forward, but it's about retention. And it's also about like being a little bit smarter with what you have. Cause I think about this a lot. There's so many organizations where they'll use basically the same product, but across the board, and they're not getting discounts because they don't have all the licenses together for a million. And it's not like just data. It's a lot of different things. There are so many products at this point that have sales, marketing, and often operations functionality, and they're paying separately for them, or the systems don't speak and the information isn't actually being passed through. And it just seems like a real waste, honestly.
Yeah. Well, and that is just a further example of that, the siloed nature that a lot of organizations have, where you have, you know, the person in charge of marketing wants the tools that, you know, help them achieve their KPIs, and sales has theirs and CS has theirs and whatever that looks like. And instead of combining tools or seeing where it is, and typically, and here's what I've seen that makes me more hopeful and excited that we're getting to the point where organizations are starting to align, is the chief revenue officer type role, which is over all of those type of departments, aligning them hopefully, and then, you know, having everyone row in the same direction for the sake of the company and for the clients. And I can imagine, like, are you seeing that more and more as well, where you're dealing with more of a CRO or someone that's atop of, let's say, the revenue portion of the org chart getting involved?
Yeah, I think that when you have a product that's going to displace something, when you're not a brand new thing that isn't like shiny, and like there are a million other companies who do what you do, or there are not. If you're displacing something, I think that I have a feeling you probably need a lot more people involved who are invested in a change, especially if they're not completely unhappy. It's like, okay, understanding that this is what we can do for this department, this is what we can do for this department, this is what we can do for this one, unifying all of this, and this is how it's gonna, you know, help your bottom line as well. It's requiring that sellers know a lot more about the inner workings of companies and these silos than perhaps they probably needed to, I don't know, like 10, 15 years ago. There's just going to be a lot more collaboration no matter what. It's just how that sort of has to happen, especially if you want to be efficient.
that is an interesting point, because I hadn't really thought about this one portion in terms of what has changed, right? Most of the time when I speak, I'm talking about how consumers have changed, how buyers have changed, and what they're looking for now. But thinking about what you said is internally, right? Thinking about the number of tools available, A, versus 15, 20 years ago. And then also the number of tools companies are going to have now versus then, right? So 20 years ago, the year 2000, how many sales enablement, CRM, dialer, like marketing tools were there? And then versus what is an organization most likely going to have now? I know as a small consulting company, how many tools I have. And you know, then I look at other companies and they just have so many. I usually, when I work with clients, first thing I do is I have to make a flow chart of all of their sales tech to try to figure out what did they do? What do they have? And then what's needed and not needed. So I'm sure that's what you're seeing as well.
Yeah. And it's also, you get a lot of questions, and I'm sure you see this too, when someone's asking for an integration, they're like, well, we need this integrated. And my next question, I try to find a nicer way to say it, but it's why? Like, what are you going to do with it? Like, I think there's also this idea that every single system needs to be integrated sometimes, and that can create more problems. You need to make sure that the data is flowing in a way that makes sense, and that whatever you're using as your source of truth, or wherever you want everything to ultimately be housed, like, that's what matters. Make sure things flow in a way that makes sense. That's not going to create issues just to that one spot, or, you know, figure out the best way to do it. But, you know, every single thing doesn't need to speak, especially if, you know, if you don't integrate with our CRM, but they have the like Marketo or HubSpot or something, and that's your marketing tool, and everything's going to go there anyways, because they like to keep it there before it goes into the CRM, then why would you need the CRM integrated? It's like understanding how things talk and being efficient, and you don't want to create duplicates or create more problems, because those things don't always work exactly how you want them to, or as fast as you want them to. Things go down, stuff happens.
Yeah. So obviously you've been at this game for a while. Where do you see data, consumer buying habits, the collection of data, you know, the outbound versus inbound kind of debate? Where do you see that going in the near future?
I think people are taking there are a few things that are going on. One, with like third-party cookies going away, that's a pretty big thing for most people. So you're going to have to be as efficient as you currently are, you're actually going to have to start with accurate data no matter what from the get-go, or you're not going to be as efficient. You won't have that opportunity. You're going to have to start with this information. That other gathering is going to largely end. You know, it's still a few years away, but you're going to have to start with really accurate data to be efficient. So that's one thing. So clean stuff up now. You have some time, clean it up, put some things in place to like really make sure that it stays clean and you can move forward that way. That's one thing. I also see, while everyone wants a platform, those integrations do matter, and understanding where people want to live, because at some point I can't log into 75 different things to do my job. That's insane. Like, no one can do that. So integrations need to happen, but they have to make sense, and there has to be real value adds for the customers. But I think the biggest thing that I see with data is just data is really never going away. So if you feel right now like it's overwhelming and you don't understand, I would really suggest trying to understand how systems speak and how your data is mapped, because I think it's just going to get crazier and crazier as we move on. And there are so many products that couldn't have existed even like, you know, 5 years ago, because there was no need for it. And now it's like, well, I'm going to do this here and do all of these crazy, crazy things with the data that I do have. But learning about what you have and what you can do with it is going to be important. And I think that really it'll help you understand what you'll need from there. Instead of just kind of guessing and taking stabs in the dark, you can make more informed decisions. But data is really not going anywhere. There are these privacy concerns. Obviously, a lot of people have those. I completely, you know, understand it's something everybody has to work with, and you want to make sure people are opting out and you're not just scraping information. But there's no, I just don't see a world where we don't keep this, the ability to sell data and understand what people are doing, so that you can provide like a more specialized experience and target people the way they want to be targeted. Or, you know, there are certain things now too, where people are a lot more aware. CTOs and like in the tech department are less likely to pick up the phone. So adapting to who you speak to for, you know, to make sure that you're getting the people around them if you want to make those phone calls and target them more with emails and ads and things like that. And then maybe a couple of well-placed calls will work. So it's going to be different, but I think everyone's starting to just take a much more targeted approach. Spray and pray has never really worked, has it? But it seems like people are trying to really focus in on what will resonate with their customers. And I see that just going even farther. So I wouldn't be surprised if there are a lot more tools around that. Curious what you think.
I think that's a great list. And I think there's that interesting balance because a few minutes ago you were talking about you have to have an API and they need this data to sync with this and go in here and push here and, you know, these integrations. And then on the other side, it's like, okay, but you need specific tools because you're going to have so many applications instead of logging into 75 things. How do you consolidate that down into one login? And I think there's a delicate balance with that because not every tool isn't going to do everything. Like certain tools aren't going to do everything you need. So you're going to need multiple tools, right? Just like if you have a toolbox at home, you don't just have one tool, right? You have a whole bunch of tools because every job requires something different. However, you just have to be careful with that balance. And the one piece of advice I would just add to your list is be careful because software sales enablement, sales tech, salespeople can be very convincing about how what they're selling will solve all of your problems. And just be very careful you're not just adding more tools into a toolbox that you literally don't know how to use that you'll never use. And you end up piling a whole bunch of stuff on because somebody was really good at convincing you you needed it.
Yeah, that's always going to be don't buy stuff that you're not going to use. You probably have a feeling when it's going on, even if they are a great salesperson. So make sure you know what you're buying.
Yes. All right. So as expected, I love this conversation. So much good stuff in there from the data seller perspective. I've always been a buyer. I've always worked with my clients who are buyers, but to hear it from your perspective is amazing. For people who want to continue this conversation with you, they have questions about what you offer, what your company does, or even just questions around data, because I know that you're, you know, even though you say you're okay, I know that you're a data nerd and you love helping people and you love talking about this based on number of times we've just hopped on calls and just talked about data. I know one big place where people can find you is on LinkedIn. So Courtney Sylvester, if they just search for you, they'll find you on there. And then also if they want to look up your company, I know it's salesintel.io if they want to find that. And Courtney, thanks again for coming on the show. I appreciate it. Hopefully this helps some people with one of the most challenging portions of running a scalable call center, which is the data side. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me. And any questions anyone ever has, I'm always happy to talk about data. I do really love it.
I know you do. Thanks for being here. And thanks everyone for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next episode.
Did you get some inspirations of ways to help your call center sales team win bigger, stronger, and faster? Hope you are fired up to scale your sales operations. If you got value from this podcast, please go in and leave a rating and review. Also, make sure to forward this episode to anyone else you know in the call center space. We appreciate your support in growing the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast family. And if you have any comments, ideas, or feedback, contact us at cutterconsultinggroup.com.